Hi, welcome to part 5 of Beginning Meditation. In this episode, I'm very excited to be joined by my friend Ron Clark. Ron has done a lot of work over the internet and person to person, helping those people following the works of Franz Boddon. And so he has a lot of experience of offering advice to people starting out with meditation. You can find out more about Ron's work by visiting his website at www.abardoncompanion.com. That's abardoncompanion.com. Incidentally, you can purchase either of Ron's 2 books at a 50% reduction from his website right now. His books are Abardon Companion and the 8 Temples Meditation Project. You can get in touch with me by visiting my website, which is www.freewebs.com/IHVH. freewebs.com/IHVH. You can go to the contact me link and send me a message. If you go to the podcast section, you can leave me a voice message, which would be very exciting because I haven't received one yet. So any feedback, suggestions would be very much appreciated. Oh, and I'm using my new microphone for the first time this episode. So hopefully, sitting here with my fingers crossed, the distortions of sound and the essings and poppings and all of that business might be a little bit reduced. I am aware that the sound quality hasn't been great for a couple of episodes and is something that I'm actively working on improving, so please bear with me. Before we listen to the interview with Ron Clark, I'd like to read you an extract from his book, Abardon Companion, concerning one of the exercises of meditation in which you passively observe what's going on in your mind. He writes, "In this exercise, the student does not block any thoughts. He or she merely observes what is present. Given time and repeated practice, you will notice that the flow of thoughts naturally slows down. But what is really happening is that you are retuning your mind to another, less cluttered level of mentation. This is not something that you can force, so it does little good at this stage to be blocking certain thoughts while letting others through, etc. Of concern here is the other distractions that arise, such as that car alarm that keeps going off in the distance, or the bark of the neighbour's dog. These sorts of incidents can distract your attention from the observance of your thoughts. While such occurrences are not within your ability to control, your response to them is within your control. So you must learn how to quickly dismiss these distractions and refocus your attention to the task at hand. At first this may be difficult, but with persistent practice, your ability to refocus will become so quick and absolute that such external events will no longer distract, or rather the distraction will be so brief that it will not interrupt your practice. Another sort of distraction is that you'll be tempted to pursue the thoughts that arise in your mind. The point here, however, is to distance yourself from involvement with your individual thoughts. You are to be only an observer, not a participator. At first, this is also very difficult, but with persistent practice you will learn how to distance yourself and observe." Enjoy the interview. Hi, Ron. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Martin. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for asking.
Right. I guess the first thing I'd like to ask you then is, how did you get into meditation? What's your background with it?
I first started meditating when I was about 15. My parents got involved in a meditation class, and it ended up being held at our house. So I just sort of sat in and just learned meditation. I'd always been that kind of a kid to begin with, but first formal meditation started at the age of 15. And it turned out that the person teaching the class was a member of the Self-Realization Fellowship. And so shortly thereafter, I joined the SRF, about the age of almost 16, I guess, and was with them for a while, learned their basic meditation, which was Focusing on the breath and on the body sensations, and really listening to the sounds that could be heard, you know, in the quiet, and things that could be seen behind the closed eyelids. Basic, simple meditation with a real religious sort of premise to it. Mm-hmm. And that sort of set me, you know, really sort of set the tone for the rest of my life. And in my early 20s, I'm 48 now, in my early 20s, I discovered Hermetics, and specifically Franz Pardon's work, and just have carried on with that form of meditation since.
How would you sum up Franz Pardon's teachings for those people who don't know anything about him? I know that's not an easy question.
How would I sum up? Well, I mean, it's probably a possible question to answer. Let's see. Hermetics, as Bardon teached it, is a process of really uncovering, excavating the true self, and in such a way that that true inner self can then be expressed intentionally and fully. Mm-hmm. Some call that self-realization. It's the focus of Bardon's teaching is all inward, really. The process is an inner process. It's framed in hermetic magic, which is mostly conceived of as an external action, but it's really an internal process.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
interesting.
There it is. That,
that helps. Thank you.
Okay.
you mentioned the age that you got started with meditation, and that was actually something that I was going to ask you, seeing as the whole theme for this podcast series really is starting out with meditation. Do you think it makes any difference what age a person is? For example, parents maybe introducing their young children, or meditation being introduced in schools. Does it make any difference how young somebody is when they're introduced to meditation? Should you be a certain age, I guess, is what I'm asking.
No, I don't think so. I think a physical age, no. Inner maturity, though, is really the key to, well, just about everything, I guess. but I don't know if meditation, I suppose it really could be forced, you know, on someone. You know, I think it would be good if it was taught as, you know, this is one thing you can do, but I think it really needs to be a choice. And I don't think it matters at what physical age one makes that choice.
Okay. And what about, I mean, I'm thinking of somebody...
Well, just a second. Going back to that, there are physical changes going on as a body matures through time. So there are certain things that, in terms of meditation, that... a pre-adolescent cannot do, and certain things that an adolescent cannot do that a much older adult body can do in terms of meditation, just because of the physical development of the brain itself.
Right, okay, that's interesting. I suppose that applies to a lot of things in life, really, doesn't it? Intellectual maturity and physiological development and all that.
They're tied together at a certain level.
What I was going to ask was, thinking of somebody who wants to start out meditating, when you first look into the topic, maybe if you look on the internet or in bookstores and things, there's
a huge array of information, isn't there? Of different traditions,
yes,
and
yes,
different presentations,
yes,
of traditions.
Yes.
And what would you, yeah, advise there for somebody who's just being bombarded with all this information and not sure in which direction to go?
Follow what feels right.
Mm-hmm.
It's really as simple as that. Follow what feels right and begin pursuing it. And it, I mean, you can tell pretty quickly whether or not it really is right for you. And you can learn just so much just by that experience, even if it takes you two steps as opposed to all the way. Those
yeah,
two steps are quite valuable. You know?
Uh-huh. So it's just occurred to me that I've not defined what meditation is in any previous episodes. How would you define meditation?
Well, are you ready for a long-winded explanation?
Yeah, if you're ready to give a long-winded
okay,
explanation.
Sure. At its most basic, meditation, I made some notes during the week. Here we are. At its most basic, meditation is the intentional turning of the conscious awareness inward. Anytime we do that, we are meditating. We do that when we're thinking. You know, when we're really just sitting and contemplating something, that is a form of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But the discipline of meditation, if you're going to sit down to meditate for the purpose of, you know, understanding yourself better or finding a more relaxed, less stressful state of mind, that kind of thing, then it's really the disciplined, intentional practice of turning the conscious awareness inward in order to examine and experience the nature of self. It's really asking that the old questions of who am I or what am I. That is meditation as it's commonly meant.
Mm-hmm. Right. And
the awareness that we're looking at when we turn inward and we look at, that's a very complex thing. And there's several different aspects of that. And I think that understanding what those aspects are and what predictably occurs when you examine those aspects with your conscious, intentional awareness, I think understanding that helps people in that process of beginning to meditate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what are the most beneficial things that somebody could get out of meditation in terms of just everyday life? What kind of improvements could it bestow upon people?
Well, I think to really understand that, you really have to understand first the structure of the awareness that meditation is investigating, because that really defines what you get out of meditation.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't mind me just rambling for a little bit here, I'll talk
about
that.
Of course not. Yeah.
Okay. The first step in meditation is really achieving that detachment that your past interviewees have talked about. That detachment from the surface mind. The surface mind is the mind we're using most of the time. It's the mind state we're in most of the time in our daily function, our mundane awareness, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It's the intersection of the unconsciousness, which is the intelligence of the body itself, and of the physical brain, the things that the physical brain and the physical body do, just of their nature. We have no awareness of those processes. That's the unconscious. Then there is what we call the subconscious, which is really the unintended parts of our conscious awareness. It's not completely unconscious. We are aware of it as it arises, or we can be, but it's for the most part unintended. It's habitual.
Right. Okay. So these are
it's the emotional
like...
responses mm-hmm. to things, emotional responses that we've learned in the past.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's the intentional conscious awareness. All three of these are at play in the surface mind, the mind chatter, that constant dialogue that's going on when we first turn our attention inward.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these emotions, there might be images, sounds, and usually for most people a dialogue of some kind, discussing all kinds of things that might be relevant to what we just experienced or not. There's just no telling what might arise there in the surface mind.
It can be quite frustrating if you suddenly realize you're unable to control that or to
well, of course you
turn the volume down.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's where this is where meditation comes in. Now, there's two basic approaches to confronting that mind chatter, an active approach and a passive approach.
Right.
A passive approach is focusing on the breath or focusing on a candle, focusing on a mantra, something like that. When you focus, like let's take the breath as a good example. When you're focusing on the breath, you know, at first it's in, out. You have this little internal dialogue. I'm in, out, and you're just really trying to grab onto the in and the out and the in and the out. And then there's the surface chatter intrudes and takes your intentional focus on your breath away.
Yes.
Grabs it and refocuses it on the mind chatter. And when your intentional awareness is focused in that mind chatter, it empowers it. It you start participating in it, and it becomes more energetic, and et cetera. So the focusing on the breath is a passive way of diverting the intentional consciousness from the mind chatter. It disempowers it. But it still has this power of attraction that brings you back into it. An active way is to focus directly on the mind chatter itself and intentionally achieve, aim your awareness at that detachment. This is what Franz Bardon teaches. This is the hermetic approach. It's to directly address the issue, if you will, of the attraction that you have, that the intentional awareness has with the mind chatter, and that involvement with the unintentional subconscious and the unconscious interaction happening. So there's those two different approaches. Focusing on the breath seems easier at first, but after a while, once you start realizing that this mind chatter does draw you back, you have to still detach yourself from it.
Mm-hmm. And do you think...
So,
sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, do you think the active or passive approaches, maybe different personality types would respond better to different approaches, or do you think usually a combination of both works best?
The passive approach... it still demands a very active addressing of the mind chatter. You still must actively detach yourself from it and refocus your awareness on the breath,
yeah,
or you know, on the candle or on the mantra. Personally, because I'm a hermetic, I think that the direct approach is better. Because there is, it's to my mind more honest and more direct, And you learn from that to identify the mind chatter immediately and to very quickly understand the strength of its attraction.
Right.
Right. And I think it leads more immediately into that process of detaching. And that's an interesting process, too. There's really different stages to that detachment. The first stage is to acknowledge that you have been, your intentional conscious awareness has been drawn back to the mind chatter, to involvement in the mind chatter. The mind chatter is not going to stop. It's going to, well, it can stop, but for now, just assume that it's not going to stop. Just let it be what it's going to be. And that's really the key to the Bardhan method, is it's about observing what's going on in the mind. Being that observer, that detached observer, and that fine line between observation and participation. Mm-hmm. But when you find that you are participating again, the first step is to acknowledge that you are participating. That sets your intentional awareness more in your control. You become much more intentional with your awareness then.
Mm-hmm.
The second step is to just accept that it is okay that you have been diverted again. That's a really key issue, because that's where people get really frustrated. It's like, oh, damn, you know, here I am again. And you got to let go of that. You know, it's okay. You know, this is the nature of the human mind, especially if it has never been taught to look at itself. So you acknowledge it and you accept it and it's okay. And then you very calmly shift your awareness back to that observation mode, that detached mode, or back to your breath, the point of focus, whatever sort of approach you're taking. So it's an easy, you need to be gentle with yourself and just keep doing that over and over, no matter how many times it takes. Eventually you get to this point where, oh, I can focus over here on this detached place. And once you do that, that's the first real benefit of meditation, is being able to sit detached from all that busyness of the mind chatter, the surface mind. That's when you first really begin to shift your identification of self away from that surface mind that we mostly live in to a more accurate definition, more inclusive definition of self.
The second part of this interview with Ron Clark will be published in part 6 of Beginning Meditation, which I'll be releasing as soon as possible within the next day or so. So stay tuned for that. And don't forget, if you want to contact me, you can do so via my website, which is www.freewebs.com/IHVH. Thank you for listening. Take care.